Welcome to this Financial Advisor podcast. It is our weekly podcast where I speak to leading financial advisors. And my guest today is Martin de Kock of the Pretoria-based group Ascor Independent Wealth Managers. It's a firm that offers a range of accounting and wealth management services. Martin has been in the industry for 2 decades. He is a chartered accountant and a certified financial planner. Martin, welcome to the show. You have been in the industry for a long time. How does the current environment for financial advice compare with what you encountered when you first started your career?
I think there's been a big mark in terms of investors being more educated because of information being more freely available. And the effect of the information being more freely available, you often find that investors tend to react to short-term, what they call noise in the market, short-term fluctuations in either markets or in currencies and so forth. So because of these short-term movements up and down, you find that investors very often make an incorrect decision, basing long-term goals at risk by taking decisions based on short-term fluctuations in the market.
So how would that work in practice? Your phone would ring. You have a client says, listen, I believe there is a lot of danger on the horizon. Please move my assets from equities to cash. I would imagine that it's a typical conversation. How do you react to that?
Yeah, that is a typical question we do get. And I think what's very important is to, at that point in time, take the investor or client back to the initial consultation where the approach was explained to him. And the reasons for moving into a certain strategy was discussed with a client, because clients very often tend to have memory amnesia when it comes to short-term decisions, and also try to convince the client to actually stick to a strategy and a plan. Because for me as advisor, when I get the question from the client, move to cash out of equities, I always explain to the client, I need to get 2 decisions right. Firstly, when do I move out of the market? Secondly, when do I move back into the market? And the problem with that is there's been extensive research done in the market, and I've just recently seen a report generated by Glaser from Sanlam, where they've taken the market over the last 20 years and taken an initial investment amount that was just invested, stayed in the market. And then what they did is they took the 10 best days in the market, took that out, took the 20 best days, and so forth. And I think on just the 20, if you just missed the 10 best days in the last 20 years, the effect on the outcome after 20 years was almost half of your growth you would have lost. And for that reason, I'm not prepared to take that risk, because it's like seeing in a crystal ball, which we're not prophets.
Now, obviously, that's a strategy of sitting on your hands. But if you have a long-term plan, sometimes you need to tweak it. And how and when do you decide, listen, you know, this strategy is not working, let's try something else?
I think what's very important is to do your homework in terms of your research, in which are the underlying funds that you do select for the client. And we do review the underlying funds on a regular basis and see if there are any substantial changes. Now, typically, we refer to the fund manager as the jockey or the person driving the behavior and the decisions. If there's a change in an underlying fund manager, that would be a cause for re-evaluating that fund. And you do find that different funds move differently because of the different investment strategies, move differently in different market cycles. And that is one of the reasons we use different funds in a portfolio, so that you have diversification of investment approaches. So we would reconsider on a regular basis to ascertain whether it was still right having the underlying fund in a portfolio. But again, it's not worth taking out a fund manager just because he's underperformed on a one-year period. Just thinking of long-term, you're looking at 5-6 years plus. And to take out a fund manager based on a 3-month or 6-month or year bad results could be very dangerous. And there I'm thinking specifically, if you think of, just to mention a few names, like a Fuad Balance Fund or Allan Gray Balance Fund, irrespective, they're both good funds, but there are times when they underperform. And you could just at the time of underperformance, take them out of a fund, and that underperformance is followed by a period of good performance, which you then miss out on.
But it should be difficult to take those decisions whilst there is so much short-term noise in the market. How do you detach such an amendment or change in a portfolio without also taking into account short-term changes? Because if you take the trajectory of expectations under President Zuma, I would assume slightly lower than many people expect at the moment that things will go better in South Africa under the new president, Cyril Ramaphosa. How do you take that into account when you change or amend a portfolio?
It's difficult. It's not easy. But I think what needs to be taken into account is the damage for the over the past decade has been so severe that it's going to take time for the economy to recover substantially. And not just looking at South Africa, you look worldwide, the expectation going forward is that we're in a market of sideways movement. And again, you don't know when the market is going to start recovering. And you might miss a blimp up 3 or 4% move on a day, and that could have a major effect. I think what one needs to take into account is when we look at an investment strategy, our time horizon is extremely important. So you would find that over short term, say 2 to 3 years, you'd be looking at conservative funds in a portfolio. Your medium term, 3 to 5 years, you'd incorporate funds that are moderately positioned in terms of exposure to equities of, say, 40 to 60%. And then your aggressive, your long-term growth would be aggressive funds, looking at from 60% plus in equities. So your time horizon has a big impact on the underlying funds you select. And then also what we do in our approach, we use an asset liability matching where we'd look at what the client's expected returns or income is he needs to survive on. And we look at this asset portfolio and we see what risk needs to be taken to generate that income. And then also, I think in addition to that, we use what they call the bucket approach, where you have your different time frames go into different underlying funds. So for instance, your first 18 months income requirement is in a money market, which is not exposed to the market. From an emotional point of view, that helps the client a lot when I can explain to him, don't worry, the markets are up and down, but your money that you're drawing on a monthly basis is coming out of a money market, which is not exposed to the market.
How much does skill influence that amount of money the investor in the end, at the end of the day receive? Because, you know, if you manage a client's money since that person starts to work and for 30, 40 years contributes to a fund, obviously you hold a key to the comforts that individual will have at retirement. It's a big responsibility. How much does skill have to do with, are you going to drive a Golf or a Merc?
I think skill is definitely an important aspect of that. What research has also shown is that sticking to a strategy gives you lots of upside, where switching in between different strategies could mean permanent loss of capital. And this is also a perception in the market where you find advisors who want to be perceived as actively managing a portfolio. And because of the perception, they want to be changing underlying portfolios and strategies, and very often at the bequest of the investor. And we disagree with that approach, because if you've got a fundamental sound approach, over time, you're going to get the growth you need. Over short term, there might be pain, but then again, it's just managing client emotions to not take the wrong decisions. And I think Warren Buffett is a good proponent of sitting on your hands when the markets are up and down.
His big motto, rule number one, don't lose money, which is not always that easy to achieve. Martin, I'm looking at your website and the first line is really interesting. It says, Asco is an independent fee-based wealth management group. Two words stand out, independent and fee-based. Why is it so important to be independent? What are the advantages over non-independent advisors?
If I just look at the last 10, 20 clients I've seen recently, almost without exception, one of the first statements the client make is they've approached us because we're independent. So we don't have any targets to chase down to keep a contract in place with platform, investment platform or a insurer. So we can really, being independent, because we don't have that pressure, we can look for the product which suits the client's needs the most. So being independent, I feel, is going forward is a big plus. And also look, with the new RDR legislation coming in, it's going to become more of an issue for clients. And as we earlier mentioned, that the clients being more aware of financial issues, they're starting to cotton on to the need or the requirement to use an independent advisor.
Why do you refer to fee-based group? I know fees are always contentious, and normally clients are more informed about the fees you charge than the returns they can expect or hope for. Why fee-based in your first line on your website?
I just think there's a perception amongst advisors that clients are not prepared to pay fees. And our experience is that if you position the fee as to why you're charging the fee and what the client is paying for, most clients are most happy to pay. And I always explain it this way, is when I do a financial plan, I distinguish between doing the plan, setting up the plan, and the implementation and monitoring or continuous maintenance of the plan. So by charging a fee upfront for the plan, I as an advisor am paid for my work in drafting that plan. That plan can be taken and implemented elsewhere, but usually clients ask us to do the implementation as well. And I always explain, if I'm paid for the time I'm putting in to develop that plan, there's zero pressure on me to actually write a product. And because of that, I think the market is structured in such a way that in terms of where you've got commission only, it's not conducive to ongoing maintenance of a plan for a client, because there's not always incentive for the advisor, because especially when you're looking at risk products, you get maybe a first year commission and a second year commission, and after that just premium increases. So there's no incentive for the client to be continually serviced by the advisor, because there's no flow of income going there.
So that's a fixed fee for you to draw up a plan.
Correct. And the fixed fee is based on the complexity of the plan. So the more complex a plan is, the higher the fee will be. And then also in our practice, we've got different levels of advisors, where we've got from junior up to senior. And on those different levels of advice, we have a different fee structure. So it's up to the client. And then what we also do is we have a look at the profile of the client. We tend to find that younger clients, they converse easier with the younger advisors, although it's not always the case, but we do find that.
How much is the fee? Say a normal, 30-year-old starting a family, salaried individual, contributing 15% towards an RA, looking for a plan, how much would that, typically be?
Typically, that would be something between 5,000 and 7,500, just a give or take. And again, a typical plan like that would probably be done by one of our more junior planners, where a more complex plan where there's trusts and company structures and involved will and testament involved, that will be done by a more senior. And then it could go up to 30, 40,000, depending on the extent of the research that needs to be done to actually prepare the plan.
Just lastly, you did refer that, did state that younger clients would typically prefer a younger advisor. I believe that, grey hairs do play a role, not only because I have a few, but luckily I'm not in that industry. Obviously, you talk within ASCA between the different advisors. Does the fact that you meet with a younger advisor differentiate your plan in the end, or is it a pretty much homogenous approach of the whole group?
It's important to us because also in terms of our strategy in how we allocate clients to the underlying planners, it does happen that a client might fall outside the ambit of who your client base is. And we do not want that if he moves to another advisor within the practice, the nature of the service he gets and the advice changes. So the process we use throughout the practice is the same process. So you'll find that you have nuances of approaches by And this is more softer skills, not necessarily the technical detail. But the technical stuff is usually the same. But it's just from advisor to advisor, you'll have more of the soft skills changing.
Thank you, Martin. That was Martin de Kock of the Pretoria-based group Escor, independent wealth managers, a firm that offers a range of accounting and wealth management services.